we're being told, you know, we're living on top of a toxic waste landfill, and we weren't aware of this when we purchased our homes.
We are the second highest cancer-causing neighborhood in the state of Louisiana.
These are voices from Gordon Plaza. It's a subdivision in New Orleans' Desire neighborhood. Established in the 1970s, Gordon Plaza is a planned community just to the west of the Deep Canal that links Lake Pontchartrain to the mighty Mississippi. When Gordon Plaza was built, it was supposed to be an opportunity for working-class strivers. With federal funding from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, the city sought to improve public housing already located in the area and to create new opportunities for community. There were rental apartments for the elderly and disabled. Advertisements from the era, they showed that each unit was outfitted with a fridge, a range, and air conditioning. Listen, that was a big deal in hot New Orleans summers. And Gordon Plaza was an opportunity for New Orleans' emerging middle-class Black community to buy into the American dream. Modest, affordable, single-family homes near schools, churches, and planned retail. The city's first Black mayor, Ernest Dutch Morial, cut ribbons at celebratory openings and posed, smiling on residents' neatly manicured front lawns.
And so HUD housing consisted of what you're calling Gordon Plaza, which was first-time homeowners' homes.
This is Wilma Subra.
Then it had an old folks' home. It had rent-to-own townhomes. And then it had grocery stores, shopping, a little shopping center, a beauty parlor. And it had a community center and it had the school. So from the perspective of a first-time homeowner, this was an absolutely magnificent place to be able to purchase a home and have a school nearby, have everything you needed for shopping, have a community center, and you really didn't have to go out of the area to get the services you needed.
All right, let's pause for a moment because Wilma Subra is president of Subra Company, an environmental consulting firm. And Ms. Subra is technical advisor to the Louisiana Environmental Action Network. So why does an environmental consulting firm president know so much about Gordon Plaza? Well, the answer to that is the heart of the story where we're beginning today on The Takeaway. Because the dream that was Gordon Plaza quickly dissolved into a nightmare for the residents of this community when they discovered the very foundation was toxic.
They did not know when they were doing the first-time homeowners or when they were doing the rent-to-own townhomes that it was on top of a hazardous waste landfill, and eventually it became designated as the Superfund site.
And to understand this story, we have to go back to the beginning. In the early 1900s, the land that Gordon Plaza now occupies was low-lying, swampy, and largely vacant. New Orleans used this area as a dumping ground for the city's waste. It was called the Agriculture Street Landfill. And for decades, residents in nearby neighborhoods complained about the site. And eventually, it was closed. But then, in September 1965...
The eye of this thing, or the greater part of it, must be right here, right now. Because there's no surging in the wind, it's one continuous blow. And I'm telling you, she's a-blowing and she's a-shaking.
Hurricane Betsy slammed into New Orleans with 150-mile-an-hour winds and storm surges that drove a wall of water straight down that deep canal from lake to river. Levees failed and the neighborhood flooded. The city temporarily reopened the Agriculture Street landfill as a dumping ground for debris from Hurricane Betsy. And to manage the mountain of trash and debris, incinerators ran bright fires day and night, earning a local nickname, Dante's Inferno. Ash, arsenic, lead, and dioxins from the incinerators spread into the air, then drifted back to the earth, blanketing the site, settling into yards, plants, grass, groundwater. Decades of waste, debris, trash, chemicals, poison, fire, water, ash, layer upon layer. This is the land where federal funders, city planners, and developers chose to build a community for the Black working class. Gordon Plaza sits atop what was once Agriculture Street landfill. most of the new residents who first bought in Gordon Plaza in the 1980s, they didn't know that their home sat on a toxic site. But within a decade, debris and residue became visible as sealed oil drums literally popped out of the ground in families' yards. Under intense pressure from environmental activists and distressed residents, the Environmental Protection Agency began to test Gordon Plaza's soil and found 140 toxic and hazardous materials, more than 40 of which were known to cause cancer. And in 1994, the EPA declared the area a Superfund, or a hazardous waste site. Wilma Subra has been working as a consultant for residents on the site since the late 1980s. And according to legal documents, the EPA tested the soil on the site in the 80s, but Subra says it wasn't until the EPA reassessed their standards for toxicity that it became clear just how poisonous the land was.
Number of years later, a more protective standards of dioxin was adopted by the EPA, and that made all the waste in the landfill exceed those standards. But in the early days, it wasn't there. So then you had benzene, toluene, xylene, ethylbenzene, the volatile organics that are known and suspected to be cancer-causing agents, polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons, and then you also said the heavy metals, mercury, lead, zinc. All of these things were combined in that landfill that this entire subdivision was built on top of. And you could actually sit in people's yards, and just with your hands, you could dig the grass and the very shallow surface soil out and get to the waste. So the exposure was right there. And then after a long time of everyone being really involved, educating the impacted communities, there was a push to actually get either relocated or a remedy.
The EPA financed a $20 million remediation project to remove contaminated soil from some areas of the property and to replace it with new soil. But now that residents in the area knew that the land they owned was a former landfill and dump site, and they knew it was potentially hazardous to their health, well, they sought more than new dirt for their backyards. They wanted a way to relocate.
We lost the relocation at that time. The remedy was removal and replacement of 2 feet. So removal of 2 feet of soil waste and put one of those orange construction blankets that you see the orange plastic at a lot of construction sites, and then put a mat and then put back 2 feet of soil. However, only 10% was removed and replaced because you didn't remove and replace under the houses, under the streets, under the sidewalks. So they did where the grass was, but that was only 10%, and the houses were left still sitting on the dump. And so as a result, the exposure continues, and it continues to this day as people live in those houses.
Then in 2005,
waves of water are already washing over parking lots in the greater New Orleans area. Some of the first signs of the approach of Hurricane Katrina.
The devastating lash of Hurricane Katrina took down levees, flooding and battering Gordon Plaza.
It damaged or destroyed all of the structures. And as a result, only the people in Gordon Plaza repaired and returned to their homes. The townhouses were finally torn down. The community center was torn down. The shopping center was torn down. And so all that's left now, if you go out there, is the Gordon Plaza subdivision part, which are the first-time homeowners. So they're single-occupant homes. And then all around the site is still the undeveloped area, which has all the waste right at the surface. And I went out there recently and I could walk on it and just with my fingers pull up the waste from the site.
Now, Subra was working with the National Environmental Justice Advisory Council at the time.
We were looking at what we could do to help the community relocate out of the area immediately before a hurricane, because most of the people for Katrina couldn't make it out of town. It was the end of the month. They didn't have any money for gas and they didn't have any transportation. So as part of that, we went on a tour. I took them on a tour, the NEJAC committee. And a lot of people were saying, why did this happen? Why is this still here? And why was it destroyed and damaged by the hurricane? And one of the EPA officials said, you had to understand the politics. It wasn't the technical issues. The technical issues qualified for relocation. You had to understand the politics. And meanwhile, these people in the Garden Plaza have continued to have to live there and cannot get relocated.
And right now, according to residents, there are 67 properties and 54 families left in Garden Plaza, and all are still fighting to be relocated. Supra says she's been working with Superfund sites since before Congress created the Superfund Act in 1980. And this site, it feels to her like a particularly glaring instance of environmental injustice.
We had a lot of communities that were impacted by groundwater from Superfund sites, by air emissions from Superfund sites, by contaminated flora and fauna from Superfund sites, but none of them were living, quote, on top of. This was the most damaging to the community of any Superfund sites in Louisiana and for the most part in the United States. And yet the community members in Garden Plaza are still living there. Not appropriate approach to a Superfund site.
My name is Jesse Giovanni Perkins. I moved in Garden Plaza in May of 1988.
Jesse bought a house for his mother and himself. And he told us he was, quote, full of happiness to be able to buy it outright without a mortgage. But he wasn't aware the home was built on toxic land.
My name is Marilyn Amar, and I'm a resident of Garden Plaza. My home was sold to me by the City of New Orleans, built on the top of the Agriculture Street landfill.
Marilyn first moved into the apartment complexes in the Garden Plaza subdivision, and then bought a home there.
I moved in this area in 1970. Not knowing this was a former dump site or landfill, that was not told to me when I moved into the apartment complex and lived there for years, and then bought the home in Garden Plaza, which is just one block difference. That was not told to me about being a landfill where chemicals were dumped.
Both Jesse and Marilyn have been outspoken advocates for their community over the past three decades. And they've sought help from the city for relocation expenses. But they just don't feel like anyone is listening.
I'm under the impression that they don't really care. We're not a priority. Anytime you say you care about your people and the quality of life and public safety, then what is a bigger public safety issue, a quality of life issue, than what we are being faced with? But what else does it take? We don't live near a Superfund site. We live on top of a Superfund site.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're continuing our conversation about the residents of Garden Plaza, whose houses were built on what was once the Agriculture Street landfill in New Orleans, designated as a Superfund, or hazardous waste site, back in 1994. Jesse Perkins and Marilyn Amar currently live in Garden Plaza. They bought their houses without knowing about the dangerous toxins they might be exposed to on their own properties. Jesse told The Takeaway about the steps he takes to protect himself, his neighbors, and his family while doing everyday things like yard work and mowing the lawn.
I do the lawn around here, all my neighbors. I just do it. I do the entire block. So when I'm doing it, I used to wear long sleeves, but I make sure when I'm stirring up the grass and the dust and everything else that's in there that I have a mask on. I was wearing a mask way before COVID came out because I didn't want to have all of that stuff going into my lungs and possibly exposing me, you know. I mean, there's different transmission rates through the skin from the pores. you know, through ingestion and just breathing. So I try to limit the amount of dust particles that I breathe when I do the lawn.
Jesse also wanted to put up swings and a slide in his backyard so his granddaughter could play. But he was concerned about exposing her to toxins in the soil. So he tries to cover up all the bare spots in his yard.
But then I had my yard tested about 3 years ago, and the lead contamination was, I think, over 1,200 parts per million. So we really, you know, became concerned for her because of her, you know, development and growth and how vulnerable that she could be to this stuff, whereas we may not be as vulnerable as she is because of those reasons. So what we did was, you know, what can we do to give her some kind of semblance of still being a kid, being able to play in the yard without giving her all of this contact with the soil? We put a trampoline up, and she goes and bounces on that, and she's about 4 feet above the ground, and we feel comfortable with that. Not totally, but, you know, a little peace of mind.
Even as they try their best to keep themselves and their families safe, illness and cancer have become routine realities for them. According to a 2019 report from the Louisiana Tumor Registry, Gordon Plaza's census tract has the second highest cancer rate in the state. Although the report also says it's hard to prove links between cancer and certain exposures. But Jesse has plenty of stories.
Well, two of my board members, one lady's about 78 years old and the other's about 72. They both are in remission from cancer. We have two people that are unofficial officers. They organize with us also. They both are in remission from cancer also. We've lost two people right down the street from where I live for multiple cancers, including brain cancer and bone cancer. And right around the corner, a 16-year-old girl died from leukemia. And next door to that young lady, a 63-year-old lady passed from multiple myeloma. One of the ladies who in remission from cancer, her husband died about 6 months ago to colon cancer. One of the ladies that's in remission from cancer, her husband is currently battling colon cancer. One of the other neighbors, his husband, he's on his third trial of chemo and radiation. So it's very widespread throughout the community.
And Marilyn has experience with this too.
I'm a 5-year breast cancer survivor. I have respiratory problems. I have skin ailments from living on this toxic landfill.
And it's not only cancer.
Five people within a one-block span of where I live, including my mother, developed dementia. I guess people would say, well, what does dementia have to do with, you know, these carcinogens? Well, arsenic, from what the research that I've done, is linked somehow to dementia.
As the Louisiana Tumor Registry report noted, these things are hard to prove. But Jesse and Marilyn, they're quite convinced.
Well, my children grew up here. My son was ill for years. He had to drop out of college for some time. He had to have different types of surgeries because he had stomach problems and part of his intestines had to be removed because of living on this chemical landfill dump site. And he had to drop out of school, go back when he was well, drop out again, go back. But when he finally graduated from college, he left Louisiana altogether. He comes to visit. He cannot stay over 2 days. He gets ill. So my children live away from Louisiana. And so they very seldom come back to this area.
Now, some people might be listening to this and asking, why not just move? But you have to remember, this was a community built for elderly and low-income families in the 1980s. And the land has depreciated in value because of its status as a Superfund site. The 54 families left in this development, many feel trapped, but they continue to fight to be relocated.
I can't afford to leave. I'm retired on a limited income. No one is going to give me a loan to buy another home. Plus, I'm a senior citizen. I can't afford to start a new mortgage. And if I could, I would not be here.
People question that, you know. Well, if you know it's there, why don't y'all just leave? If it were that simple, we would all be gone. It's much more complicated than that.
Jesse says even if he could afford to leave, there's still a matter of principle.
Let's just say it's not just about the money, but it's going to take money to make this situation right for us. It is. It's nothing else is going to do it. And the city has the money. And that is the sad irony of this whole situation. We don't want to die here. We're going to die one day. All of us are going to die. But I don't want to die because my city neglected to do the right thing to remove me from a toxic waste landfill.
Back in 1993, the Environmental Protection Agency tested the soil where these houses are and found 140 toxic and hazardous materials, more than 40 of which were known to cause cancer. The next year, the EPA designated the area a hazardous waste site. In 1993, the community filed a class action lawsuit against the City of New Orleans, Housing Authority of New Orleans, and the Orleans Parish School Board. In 2005, Civil District Court Judge Nadine Ramsey awarded residents $90 million. Now, Ramsey wrote an extensive decision citing the failures of city and school board officials. The financial award was meant to compensate residents for the loss of property value and their experiences of emotional distress. But just months after the judge's decision, Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. Many residents were displaced and municipal services were disrupted for years. Officials appealed, negotiated, and many residents still have not seen any compensation from the original ruling. In 2015, the Housing Authority of New Orleans' private insurers paid out $14.2 million, but little of that reached residents. In a new judgment in March of this year, Orleans Civil District Court Judge Nicole Shepard again sided with residents, awarding a $75 million judgment. But residents are concerned that they won't see much, if any, of that money after legal fees. In 2016, the city amended its master plan and included a portion about Gordon Plaza residents. It provided a five-year timeline to, quote, identify and apply for federal, state, and other funding or resources to relocate consenting residents of the Gordon Plaza subdivision that was built on the Agriculture Street landfill. That five-year timeline ended in 2021. Residents have estimated it will now cost $35 million to relocate the 54 families still living in Gordon Plaza. In the newest city budget, passed back in December, New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell allocated $2 million in bond funding to survey the site for redevelopment. In a statement provided to The Takeaway, the city said it plans to turn Gordon Plaza into a sustainable solar farm that would increase the city's power resilience and minimize greenhouse gas emissions. On January 6th of this year, the New Orleans City Council earmarked $35 million in the capital budget to help relocate residents, but the money's not guaranteed.
Now in 2022, with still 67 properties here, we fought to be on the budget for $35 million as a budget line item. We need an immediate timeline and distribution of these funds. It's long overdue. The time is up. It's time for action now. So we're still in a fight with the city, trying to get the mayor to go ahead and do a timeline and allocation and distribution of these funds so we can get off of this toxic soil. I would love to live the rest of my life on some clean soil.
And after so many years of fighting, residents are still skeptical about timelines and intentions.
We want a fully funded relocation. Cut the checks, get them in our hands, let them clear. That way we know it's a done deal. And allow those people that want to stay, let them stay. But I do know that the majority of the people want to leave. And a lot of these people are getting old now. You know, they're up in age, in their late 70s. And a couple of them in their 80s. You know, I want them to be able to live to see this come to light. I want them to be able to just have the joy of knowing that, you know what, our fight was not in vain, no matter what the city does anyway. Still not in vain because we're doing what's right. You know, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be standing up and fighting for our rights. You know what I mean? We didn't volunteer knowingly came into this situation. Oh, I'm good with that stuff. No, none of us weren't aware. So we don't deserve the treatment that we've gotten from our city. We've literally been failed on every level of government, local, state, as well as federal.
Environmental racism. It's the only explanation some residents have after three decades of struggle.
but it just so happened to be my community is all Black people, all Black people. And we feel as though if it was one white person living back here, we might have been out of here. But we weren't lucky enough to have one white person living back here. Now, whether that holds true is yet to be seen, but that's just the consensus of the people.
We are Black families. These homes were sold to low and moderate income Black families. This is why we've gone through six mayors. This is why we're still here. And the fight was really strong back in 1994, but the people just gave up, died out and gave up. Now, since Hurricane Katrina, we've started up again with the fight, and we're not giving up because we want to live a quality of life, not on this toxic landfill. And we want future generations not to have to live on this landfill. So that's why we're still in the fight and we're not giving up. But I do believe because we're all Black families, and that is one of the reasons why we're still here.
We want to say thank you to Jesse Perkins and Marilyn Amar for sharing their stories with us. And a note that Katarina Barton was our lead producer on this story, with a little help from our senior producer, Ethan Oberman.